Well, it's been so exciting to hear when we started to look at the program and know that other people were speaking. It was an honor to be included with this group of folks. I'm going to tell you a little story of sort of our path of what had happened. I've been very fortunate as a physician assistant educator that the HRSA has had PA training grants. And one of the things how through this cultural competency was an issue that was important in our profession, and we saw some changes within Georgia, and so I decided that we were going to put one of our objectives was going to Hispanic health. Again, Georgia had started to develop, like about 10% of our population were coming in with migrant workers, and I wanted my students to be prepared to handle these patients. And I ran into another person on campus that was interested in helping me accomplish this initiative, and that was Jenny Zuniga, who she and I have worked on multiple projects together. Then we included, at the time for our College of Allied Health was Kent Guyon, and he started to work with, again, the culturally competence and health literacy. And then he ended up becoming the vice president of our institution's diversity office. Then we've looked at people's understanding of how to use interpreters a couple times. We also faced accreditation for our institution. And SACS, which is the Southern College's accreditation branch, they have one thing that's called a quality education program. And we selected that as our institution's was going to be cultural competency. And so we came from like very rudiments at our institution, and it's now one of our primary objectives of the institution. And so it's very rewarding to see how much our institution has grown. So that's where I'm coming from. Okay, so again, Jenny is my team. Then we've also had someone helping us with statistics, and again, our Dr. Guyon, now the vice president. Then Vivian Rice, who's the Office of Interpretation Services, is called Class Management. And then several of my faculty helped me do this most recent survey. So I have no disclosures to make as well, but again, for most of you in the audience, a lot of this information is very current in your mind, but again, we've had changing demographics, and again, as Caucasians comprise only 72% of the population, again, Hispanics or Latinos, it's 16.3%. Again, in Georgia, the statistics are a little bit different, and African Americans are much more prevalent. But then 12.6 African American, Asians 4.6, Native Hawaiians and other Pacific Islanders 0.2%. And again, we found in our own institution that non-English speakers were increasing, and that was a major barrier of care for many of these patients. And again, the class started, again, with having the folks that are sitting here that have done the class standards. I've just tried to implement and make sure it's happening on our campus. And so, again, in the old cultural and linguistic competence, it implied ability by healthcare providers and organizations to understand and respond effectively to the cultural and linguistic needs brought by patients to the healthcare setting. And so, again, in studies about cultural competency, training of healthcare providers are very important in this piece. And so that was where I was reaching this population, is trying to make physician assistants, medical students that I encountered, nursing, and other health providers at our campus more aware of the class standards. And again, then what we did is we looked at, they had done a survey a number of years ago about people's understanding of what class meant, stood for. And then, so we did that in 2006, and then we repeated it in 2011 to see where we had grown over this period of time. And this was a non-randomized cross-sectional study of students and faculty at our campus. And survey was reformatted and modified a little bit and then sent off with Zoomerang. Most of us that do a little bit of research, that's a tool that many of us are familiar with. And what we did is everybody got the Zoomerang study at one point, then we sent up 30 days in reminder again to try to get people to respond. And the survey responses were anonymous, and again, our Office of Evaluation Services helped push and crunch the numbers. And then we did a linear by linear association and chi-squared tests used to determine the significant differences in the linear traits between the responses of the two survey. And then we again used SPSS, and then the tests were all two-tailed with differences considered significant if they were less than the 0.05. We ended up having 525 participants in the 2011 survey, and of those, the 333 had actual patient contact. Again, since it was sent out to both educators, students, and providers, then we got, so the majority of these were people who had contact with patients. And we had, I don't know if our females at Georgia Health Sciences were better about responding, but again, in allied health nursing, again, there's predominance of females, and so we had a 75% of the respondents were females. Then 74% were white, then we had 11% were African American, and then 3.7% were Hispanic. And of the 63% of the respondents reported that they previously received class education. And this is by one of my other colleagues, Vivian Rice does work with me, and Jenny and Dr. Guyon. And one of the things that when we looked at both how would people on the campus want to be trained, and both in 2006 and 2011, most people responded that they wanted web-based interactive courses. And it had grown a little bit more between the 2006 and then 2011, from 31 up to 55% again wanted web-based instructions. And then out of all the questions, we had about five items that showed notable differences, and so we're going to discuss those differences. The survey item, patients have a complete and accurate communication and or comprehension with my Spanish-speaking ability. And this way, we're trying to find out how many of our providers and students and other things had some kind of other language or Spanish-speaking ability. And that we had some growth over this period of time, strongly agree from 3.4 to 8.4%. Again, there's somewhat the, but almost all levels, people were much, there was an increase in that. And then I know how to work with medical interpreters. One of the things that when I first thought of when I did this training grant objective for my PA students, I thought, oh, we'll teach them some medical Spanish and then they can provide better care. Well, then after reading the class standard, again, that isn't sufficient. You need to have someone that is much better versed in language. And so I admire your system and your healthcare providing clinic. But again, that so then it gets more important for my students, the medical students, the residents and fellows to understand how to use the interpreters. Also, people often, you know, when a child, sometimes the school-age kid can speak English at a rudimentary level, and they're trying to have a mother's health care problem interpreted by a child, which is, again, against the law. But, again, because of quick fixes, that's what people have done. And so it was, this is where we sort of looked at our education and really put our emphasis in having to use an interpreter appropriately. And so, again, we saw improvement over the period from 2006 to 2011 about people's comfort level using the interpreters. The other one, I use medical interpreters when I have a Spanish-speaking patient. And again, there was improvement in this area. Often, too, as a physician assistant, I'm an educator 4 days a week and then a clinician 1 day a week. And often, you know, somebody's trying to cut corners. Even sometimes the patient doesn't want to wait for the interpreter. But once you encourage them to, again, take a few moments, have the interpreter there, you can just see, like, the level of anxiety drop down on the visit when that interpreter comes in, and they're very comfortable and assured that they understand what I'm suggesting is their best care, and making sure that I understand why they're truly here in the clinic. So the one of the things that class became part of the curriculum in many of our nursing, PA, and medical school. Then we started to develop modules to help the health professionals. Also, HRSA had a wonderful site about both class and then the health literacy that I had. All our students had to go through the certificate so they understood some of these ideas within the first week of arriving on campus. And so this is one of the things, again, with Vivian Rice, the head of the interpreters. Again, when we did our 2005-2006, they had only less than 4,000 services given during that period. And then you can see over these years that now there's 88,000 visits that utilize the interpreter services. Again, the awareness, people started to use the appropriate class standards, then you realize we don't have enough interpreters. Then you, again, can justify that this is an important service. Again, we have other individuals. This is primarily our language that that people had to change and adapt to was Spanish. We're getting more, again, Atlanta's a different kind of city than Augusta, Georgia is. Then, one of the things, too, that you saw the growth in the full-time interpreters, again, we're getting a few more voluntary interpreters. We didn't have any until 2011. So, one of the things, everyone has to know the appropriate use of the medical interpreters and their practices. Again, we also have phone interpreters, too, with when it's a language that we don't have any interpreters of that. Also, we're fortunate in the setting I work in family medicine, that we have native speakers and so that are fluent and so that we have three of our physicians are fluent. And then at several of the nurses, which has also made our area one of the clinics that have increasing number of Hispanic patients because they know that when they come, they're going to be understood. And this is the part where I was telling you that this was our quality educational program for our SACS accreditation. It's called Healthy Perspectives, Better Healthcare Through Better Understanding. This also, in our annual training, whether you're a secretary, the clerk, the chief of the hospital, all of us have to go through some levels of our healthy perspectives, making them aware of cultural competence and of things like the class standards. And so now I know, too, that we're going to have a class enhancements, and so I'll make sure that that's part of our program as well. And so why is it important? We heard much more eloquently, why do we need to be culturally competent? My students also have a small association with one of the churches that have a soup clinic, and we give care on Saturdays when they're doing their soup clinic to patients that can't afford any kind of care, and so we work with the homeless in the Augusta area. But so the part that was brought up in our first speech, the things about strategic planning, these are part of our strategic planning for 2020, and cultural competency falls into three of our four top strategies of how to accomplish our goals. Again, we've had an academic program accreditation. This is an issue for like PAs as well as medical schools and other things have to have cultural competency. And we also have another feature at our clinical thing is patient-centered care. Well, you can't have patient-centered care if you can't even communicate with that person. And so our entire enterprise has the dental school, the College of Allied Health, the College of Nursing, the Medical College of Georgia, which is the MD portion, and then we have a healthcare system. And so that's our enterprise, so that it encompasses everyone. And we're going to be incorporating another institution in our city that's just undergraduate. So it's going to be interesting to widen their perspective of health as well. And so with this, the part of graduation requirements, they'll have to have demonstrated that they completed the healthy perspectives. And again, the programs have to enroll each of their students in the healthy perspective. First, there was just some online part, but now we're going to also have, we're doing a pilot where we're using simulation where they actually work with interpreters as students, and then they're videotaped, and we have pre and post testing, and then we're, right now we have just four content models. And the pre and post testing assessment's going well, and the students' attitudes have been very positive. We're going to try to improve our efficacy to perform in cross-cultural situations, to demonstrate improved communication skills when interacting with culturally diverse patients, families, and health professionals. And so VISTA is one of our, like many of you guys are, if you're in education, there's Blackboard and all sorts of different. So this one's on VISTA right now, and they have both slides and materials that link them off to other areas. And the interactive program is what we wanted to do and not have something totally passive. And so we're going to be using TheraSim technology, which is the computer things sort of respond back. And if you go different, there's multiple tracks you can go through. And so here's just a couple of the feedbacks. I love the interaction, much more preferable than reading or watching a video. And they thought it was very positive. And so I'm just proud of, we were very far behind when I stumbled on trying to do this for my own program, and now I'm very pleased how much our institution has changed and how it makes people of many different cultures more comfortable coming to our care. So thank you.
Great presentations. Does anyone have any questions now for any of our speakers? I'm sure you're all here because you're interested in the topic. If no one does, I have a question for Ms. Pei. I'm leading a project in Orange County that's funded by the California Healthcare Endowment to create a patient-centered medical home in the safety net. We're calling it the Health Home Innovation Partnership Initiative of Orange County. And we, through the grant, are funding patient navigators. And you had stated that you use a medical assistant. That's the minimum criteria. My question is, do they substitute the MA who's supposed to be partnering with the primary care provider in what we traditionally define as visit responsibilities so that they are truly an additional team member, or are we substituting a medical assistant's jobs and actually giving her another hat to wear in addition to being a medical assistant? So that would be my question.
Okay, so my law traditional one-on-one, one-to-one ratio, because we clearly need
Yeah, actually, the way our is being used is more like the health navigator, not the. We're actually calling them. Some of the clinics are calling them care assistants, but that's the distinction we're trying to make, is to not supplant the MA, and that whatever MA ratios you have to support your providers need to stay in place. This person needs to be an enhancement to the care team. Because if we're truly, my own opinion is, if we're truly going to prove to policy and to funders that this particular position is important to create the primary care transformations, the patient-centered medical home, the interpretation, really be compliant with class to make meaningful change, it needs to be an additional body in the clinic. So.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And again, these positions are funded through a grant, so that's the issue. How sustainable is it when the grant goes away, the positions are no longer funded? Thank you. Thank you. Question?
It's a kind of question. First of all, I want to thank all the panelists. I think you did a fantastic job.
My friend, but she couldn't cut all of you, so I got to present part of it.
First of all, I wanted to thank you for promoting the FAT standards within your institution. Secondly, I would also, I don't know if your students are also taking the cultural competency learning programs that they offer.
Well, we've done the one where they had all the five doors that they went in and they had to do that, but
any other questions? Any other innovation out there that people want to share what they're doing relative to class? I assume you all were interested in the topic, which is why you're all here. We have a small, intimate group. Okay, if there's nothing else to say, I'd like to give a round of applause again for the speakers. Thank you so much.